Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we have a special guest. Name is Ray Borges, and he's the author of a book called Revolt: The Secession of Mill Valley. Okay, and it's he's a interesting fellow. He is a attorney and written several books, but this particular book we'll be talking about is about Secession, and it's a fiction book, it's a novel, but he wants to talk to us tonight about different aspects of a revolution, if you will, and the secession of different towns and states that are going on now. There've been over 50 petitions to secede from the country between.
And doing it in a fiction work is his way of talking about it.
But yeah, Mill Valley is just a way of trying to get around it. But we also talked to him tonight about a few different other things.
I do believe he's an insurance disability lawyer.
Yes, I just said that.
People
yeah.
who have severe disabilities
yeah.
or disabled, and companies try to deny them benefits, he works to make that happen for them.
Right. And
so he must have gone up against some big corporations in his time.
Well, what is basically what his book is about is, can we change a broken nation, basically? He says there's a secession of revolt, a secession of Mill Valley. His protagonist, Sean Cogan, answers these questions by daring a small town to walk away from the United States of America in this fast-paced, well-balanced rip from the headlines and thought-provoking novel. It's kind of an interesting. It's interesting what he did. Believe that no matter who is president, regardless of political affiliations, we are no longer a country of the people, by the people, or for the people. He believes that, or Cogan believes that we have become a nation held in a vice grip by powerful Wall Street interests and corrupt multinational corporations. He thinks most people are too ambivalent, too distracted, too afraid to do anything about it. And he's right. He's absolutely right. And that's why I'm anxious to see what he has to say. Ray is uniquely qualified, it says here, for a political pundit and a proponent for change against corporate and political corruption. A lawyer and consumer advocate practicing out of San Francisco, California, Borges has been at the forefront of the battle against excessive power and greed for over three decades. A graduate of UC Berkeley, prestigious Bolton Hall, he specialized in policyholding representation in cases involving wrongful denial and long-term disability insurance claims. An interesting guy. So, anyway. We'll talk to him in a little bit, probably in about
10 minutes.
Yeah.
But until then, we have other news issues to bring you.
Yeah.
And I have an interesting little audio here. The title is Hillary Clinton. We can't legalize drugs because it's just too much money in it. And she's kind of at an angle, yucking it up.
That, yeah.
And the dumbest thing ever said by Hillary Clinton, this is what the caption is here. But let's see what exactly is said on this.
She has a short video here on this.
It's right off of YouTube. But there's so much talk of drug legalization, I thought it might be interesting.
Madam Secretary, recently during an interview on Mexico's Televisa, you said we can't legalize drugs because there's just too much money in it. No. You see, there's so much money in the drug trade because of the black market. And there can be black markets in just about anything. Take pantsuits. If the government made pantsuits illegal, You know what? On second thought, let's choose something people like. Wine. If the government made wine illegal, what would happen to the price of wine? It'd go up, Madam Secretary. Think of it like this. Government officials can shut down winemakers and sellers, but they can't shut down your love of wine, or Crown Royal, or Presidente beer. And since lots of Americans like the sauce as much as you do, new people start making and selling alcohol. But these new people are pretty sketchy. No surprise, because what they're doing is illegal. They dodge cops, get into turf wars. They could end up dead or in prison. So why do they bother, Madam Secretary? It's because they know they can make the big bucks, because they have fewer competitors and lots of customers. That's what happened during a period called Prohibition. There were turf battles over booze, all kinds of violence. What caused all that bad stuff, Madam Secretary? I'll give you a hint. Alcohol prohibition causes violence, and so does drug prohibition. Notice there are no gangster shootouts over your Chardonnay.
It's happy news!
That's because the government sobered up and ditched alcohol prohibition. Now, if they'd only wise up on drugs. Look, you're always on a plane traveling around the world for work, so maybe we can blame your drug legalization slip of the tongue on jet lag. Or too much Crown Royal.
So it was on Mexican TV. I didn't realize that.
That she
made the slip.
Oh. Yeah.
So. Oh. But that was kind of interesting. Yes, we know that there's a lot of money in it.
Yeah.
And that's why it so far hasn't been legalized.
Well, the one thing that there's a whole lot of money in it, and I'd like to get to it tonight before, is this serious problem we're dealing with right now with.
What are you looking for?
The currency collapse.
Oh.
It's up further.
I read that.
Oh, before we do that, let's go to this one. The CFR, if anybody knows who they are, the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a bunch of hoo-ha, you know, foreign policy think tank guys out of Washington that seem to run the world.
Calls on Obama to befriend an Al-Qaeda terrorist group.
Right.
It's just
absolutely amazing that we could be supporting terrorists that bombed us, supposedly bombed us, okay?
Well, of course, Al-Qaeda was a made-up CIA thing. So.
Yeah, but...
So these are probably made-up CIA guys.
But very possible. So Lila can read some of this.
This is by Paul Joseph Watson, that's InfoWars. The Council on Foreign Relations, a highly influential Washington, D.C. think tank, has called on the Obama administration to befriend a terrorist group in Syria, which has pledged allegiance to Al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri, and whose leader helped plan the 9/11 attack, supposedly. In an article entitled The Good and the Bad of Ahrar al-Sham, an Al-Qaeda-linked group worth befriending, the CFR's Michael Doran, William McCants, and Clint Walks argue that supporting the terrorist faction would help the United States contain Iran and Syria as part of Obama's larger strategy. The authors even admit that the leader of Ahrar al-Sham and Abu Khalid al-Suri recently published a statement praising bin Laden and al-Qaeda's current chief, al-Zawahiri, underscoring the fact that al-Qaeda and Ahrar al-Sham are joined at the hip. According to reports, al-Suri, real name Mohammed Bahaya, is a longtime al-Qaeda operative who worked as a courier for the terror network, as al-Zawahiri's representative in Levant, and even delivered surveillance tapes of the World Trade Center and other American landmarks to al-Qaeda's senior leadership in Afghanistan in early 1998. According to the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, other al-Qaeda operatives hold key positions. So essentially, the CFR, which is basically a front for the State Department, is now calling on the Obama administration to make an alliance with an al-Qaeda group whose leader helped plan the 9/11 attacks, all in the name of destabilizing Iran and Syria. The article goes on to claim that Obama can justify supporting Ahrar al-Sham because not all terrorist organizations pose an equal threat to the U.S. and its allies. despite the fact that the group is allied with terrorists who share the same vision of Sharia law across the region, while they ransack Christian churches, burn U.S. flags, and chant anti-American slogans and sing the praises of Osama bin Laden while glorifying the 9/11 attack. The Council on Foreign Relations is considered to be America's most influential foreign policy think tank and has deep connections with the U.S. State Department. Hillary Clinton welcomed the fact that the CFR had set up an outpost down the street from the State Department in Washington, D.C., because it meant I won't have to go far to get told what we should be doing. One would hope that the State Department would not be sympathetic to making alliances with al-Qaeda terrorists, although their VIP treatment of al-Qaeda-linked Muslim Brotherhood members, which recently came to light, will do little to provide otherwise. And we also recently highlighted the United States and NATO powers have routinely supported or turned a blind eye to al-Qaeda's activities for decades as part of a larger geopolitical strategy centered around using the terrorist groups to destabilize countries to grease the skids for regime change.
Okay.
So there you have it. They figure they can use al-Qaeda for one reason or another. There's also other things to talk about, too. Syrian opposition, Israeli jet bombs, missile launches into Latakia.
0584585890. Can't take your call now. You can leave a message after the tone. When you have finished, press the pound key or just hang up.
Try his cell phone.
Let's see. So we're calling the board.
And we're trying to make a call to our guest, and Ray Boris, to talk about his book, Succession. I think I have that name right. But in the meantime.
And tell us, tell them what it is.
I gotta look at it.
Revolt.
Revolt. And the book is Revolt, The Secession of Mill Valley. And through this, you know, fiction book, he talks about, you know, secession of a town and how that comes about and why. And it's his way of dealing with this topic, which, you know, many towns in some states have talked about secession, actually, because they don't agree with the direction that the federal government is taking. Talks about that web and how that comes about and all the reasons. I'm going to call him, and we'll see if we can get him. Consequences of that would be, whether that would be a really positive thing or whether it would be destructive. And also,
we'll hello.
Because he
hey, Ray. How are you?
Okay.
Hello.
Hey, Ray. Can you hear us? Ray.
I can't hear you. No.
You can't hear us.
Hold on 1 second. Let me see what I can do with this.
You probably got it on mute.
For some reason, you're not coming through loudly.
Oh, well, I don't know why. We've got you on full power here. Anyway, we can hear you very well. Can you hear us at all?
Do you want me to try to call you back?
Why don't you do that? Let me give you the phone number here.
Okay.
Studio number is 646-915.
Wait, 646?
915-9505.
Let me read that back to you. 646-995-9505.
No, 646-915-9505.
915-9505. Okay, let me try to call you right back. If I don't get through for some reason, give me a ring back, okay?
Will do.
All right.
Thank you.
And by the way, for those who might be listening, that's also our call-in number for if you want to call in to speak with Ray or us. And
Leo has to watch to see when the call comes through. Well, he used to hang up and then call. So it takes a few minutes. As I was saying, he can talk about the consequences of secession. You know, and there will be consequences. Some will be positive and some will be negative. And is that really a viable alternative in today's world? I'm not sure it really is, whether it could really work. And what about the corporations and the control they have over this country and the recent Supreme Court decision that made corporations really equal to people? And what about the funding of political parties? You know, what has that done to our country? And what has that done to political parties, really? Are they really political parties anymore, or are they just representatives of big business? You know?
Hi, Ray, are you with us? Hello?
Hello?
Hi,
yes,
Ray.
Hello, Ray.
Can you hear us? Can you hear us, Ray?
Must be his phone.
Yeah.
He comes through loud and clear.
Yeah, he comes through fine, but I
don't understand why he can't hear us.
I don't see a volume control on this anywhere.
That's right.
This
can
is a brand new phone, and I don't understand it at all. Is there any way
you
can speak louder?
Can you hear us? We can hear you very clearly.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry. What did you say?
We can hear you very clearly. Can you hear us at all?
How much time do we have between now and the time we're starting on the air?
Well, we're on the air now, actually. We started already as soon as you called in.
Oh, okay. I was going to try to make a telephone call, see if I could find out more about this. But let's give it a try then.
Okay. Yeah, because we can hear you very well. So, you know, we'll talk very loudly to you.
We gave a little introduction to your book, and we talked a little bit about you, and we talked a little bit on the air about the focus of your book, which is secession. And that's always an interesting concept. But, of course, there are repercussions from something like that and consequences. Do you actually, but what do you believe about secession? Is that a viable alternative to many of the problems that states and towns are experiencing?
Well, I think it's important to understand that we're not trying to promote a civil war here. And
no.
We're not certainly trying to create upheaval. The idea is that to make a very firm statement to the effect that we're fed up with the graft and the corruption, with corporate corruption, with lobbyists writing all of our laws, with the budget deficit, with the nonsense that we see in the way Congress operates, with some of the decisions of the United States Supreme Court, going back really as far as Bush versus Gore, where they ordered a state to stop counting votes, and as recently as the decisions allowing foreign governments and foreign individuals to contribute to American elections, which I think is one of the most outrageous concepts imaginable. And the bottom line is, whether it's the right or whether it's the left, everyone is pretty much fed up with the way the government is operating, with the way things are happening. And you can talk about people being upset because, on the one hand, let's take health care. On the one hand, people are upset because we don't have a health care system like they do in Western Europe. On the other hand, people are upset because of government intrusion and what they consider to be socialized medicine. So nobody's happy with that. When you have a situation where people are spending millions of dollars to run for Congress, tens of millions of dollars, and billions of dollars to run for president, and you allow private corporations and private individuals who are very wealthy, billionaires, to influence, not only to influence, but I think some people would say to control the results in these elections, then what role do the people have anymore in their own government? So the idea behind revolt is that Sean Cogan has had it, and he's talking to his friends at a cocktail party where the whole thing starts out, and he's saying, I can't stand this anymore. We can't leave this to our children. We can't allow our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and all of the things that we hold dear to just be going up in smoke like this with all of the craziness that the government is participating in. And so his friends say, well, what can you do? You can't reform it. There's nothing you can do to make things change. You have third-party movements that have tried to do that on both sides of the aisle. You got Ralph Nader on the one hand. You got Ross Perot on the other hand. And there's a long tradition of third-party efforts in the United States, and none of them have ever amounted to a hill of beans. And the only thing they've ever been able to accomplish is to screw up the principal election candidates. They haven't done anything else, and they're never going to do anything else. So the question is, well, then what can you do? Can you do anything at all? And Cogan says, you know what, I'm marching down to town hall. I'm going to put an initiative on the ballot in this little town of ours, and we're going to have a vote on whether Mill Valley should secede and start its own government, start its own autonomous entity with its own Supreme Court, with its own Congress, with its own rules about elections, where we're not having Supreme Court justices telling people that spending money is the equivalent of free speech and that corporations have a right to free speech, and therefore you can't put restrictions on campaign contributions. We're going to do it. And this gets started. It gets started kind of tongue-in-cheek, of course, and then it takes on a life of its own because of what happens. I don't want to give away too much of the book, but suffice it to say, as you might well imagine, government entities get involved. The powers that be are not happy with seeing this happen. They're worried that it's going to spread all over the country. And so all hell breaks loose.
Well, Ray, this is the problem that we as activists have had for, and Lila and I particularly have seen, for probably the last 13 years that we've been on radio and television and, done so much work in these areas where we've done documentaries on these major movements down there in D.C. And all we've got for it was sprayed by bioweapons, censored by the mainstream media, censored by our own political local politicians, and censored by our major radio station that we were on for 8 years was suddenly sold out and condemned by NPR. National Petroleum Radio took over. So it's like we got kicked off the air through on FM. But we were this is the problem. And people in these areas. I don't know if you remember the impeachment movement that was going on to impeach Bush back in 2007. Do you remember that? Our community.
Because of our bad connection, I'm having a little bit of trouble understanding everything you're saying. What was the name of the book that you're talking about?
What book?
No, in 2007. Do you remember the impeachment movement of Bush?
All the towns.
Oh yes, of course.
We had a number of activists in our state here, who tried. We got actually in our town, Salisbury, Connecticut. They did actually pass an impeachment resolution to impeach Bush, but in several other towns around the state that tried it, they got the people that were promoting the movement. Really got censored, got canned, and got ridiculed by a number of the Republican-held town committees, So it was really everything that we've seen so far, and we've tried. Major marches where you're seeing 300,000-400,000 people marching down past in Washington and major nationwide movements, Occupy and everything else. Got nothing. We've gotten nothing for it. Other than beat up, kicked around, arrested, and thrown off the airwaves, nothing. So where do you think it's actually even possible for a secession movement to happen, or even much less a secession movement, even just a third party or a person, a third party ever making it to Washington D.C.
Well, that, of course, is a very important question. I mean, the issue of where third-party movements are going to go in this country. Again, in some countries, in European countries especially, there are many political parties, and they do express different points of view. And there are severe restrictions against contributing to election campaigns. It's not only is it illegal, but it is considered corruption for politicians to be taking money, anything remotely resembling, a hundredth of what the politicians in this country take. And we've gotten so used to it, and we've gotten so hardened by the process, Republicans and Democrats alike. I mean, I don't know about you, but I get probably 10 or 15 unsolicited emails a day from the Democratic Party, from the Obama administration, and I'm sure my Republican friends experience the same thing, and the Tea Party people are also out running around out there trying to raise money. It's just money, 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 money. And as long as that's the case, as long as you have to have money to buy airtime, as long as candidates that are not able to raise millions and billions of dollars are just going to be considered gadflies and irrelevant, commentators, we're not going to see any kind of a change. Now, the real question is, why in the world are people so stupid? How is it that the average voter doesn't get it and isn't organized to the extent of saying, we're simply going to vote out anyone that has a budget to win this election. We're going to vote against people with the money. We're going to take those people with the big television ads, and we're going to vote against them. We're going to organize to do that. Well, right now, there is no successful organized movement that has ever been created to accomplish anything or even to address that kind of an issue. And it's a shame, but that's the way it is. So the question becomes, well, how do you wake people up? What is going to shake things up enough that people are going to pay attention to what's going on here and are going to act upon it? And a couple of years ago, I wrote a book called Insult to Injury, and I was interviewed by over 100 radio stations across the country about that book. And I kept getting the same question: why is it that people are putting up with this nonsense? Insurance companies are getting away with murder. They are literally killing people in purported disagreements about disability insurance and health care insurance. And everybody knows it, and nobody's doing anything about it, and why do people put up with it? And the answer that I got more often than not was that until it hits home, until it hits your dinner table and mine and the rest of the populations, people are going to put up with an awful lot. They're not going to go out and revolt. They're not going to do anything unless they are individuals who are particularly political and paying attention, very close attention to what's going on in this country and the world. So I don't know the answer to that, but I can. I'll let you know, depending on how many books I sell, whether people are ready for it or not. We'll see.
Well, we always thought they were, you know, until we plunged into it, and the progressive Democrats and the Tea Party Republicans and the, you know, the Libertarians and the and then within all of those groups were infiltrators, provocateurs, and FBI and CIA and everybody else were, you know, in their tracking anybody who was an infiltrator or anyone who was a real activist. And what happened was, is the voices got taken off the air. They got arrested. They got harassed. Major people got sidetracked. I mean, we got one guy who just died today. Pete Seeger just died today. Probably one of the world's greatest activists. But you know, for the last 20 years, he's been more or less censored too. I mean, you know what I mean? He got out there and he tried like hell. He tried to save the
environment.
What he did is he got involved with trying to save the Hudson River, all right?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's very interesting.
They pretty much ignored him. He had a boat ride, a couple times a year down the Hudson River to try to ward off the nuclear power plant there that's been leaking into the river forever. But, even a great man like Pete Seeger, he got totally ignored it too. You know, he made no progress whatsoever regarding the nuclear power. And we've done documentaries on it. We've worked hard trying to make statements about these and bring up the warnings about these plants and about all of these different issues. And all we get is absolutely nothing. All right? It's either censored or it's moot, or the newspapers go after you, or somebody goes after you, and you can't, you're mute. You know?
Well, you probably know better than anybody how it works.
Oh,
when
yeah.
groups make progress, like a friend of ours made progress against the nuclear plant, got it shut down. The nuclear industry waited a couple of years, then shuffled some paper, changed the name of the company, and reworked the corporation,
They sold it to another company, and they're operating this dangerous facility under outdated permits. So it's like, you're sitting there, you got an entire state that is being contaminated daily, by these plants, nobody's doing anything about it.
Well, then you realize that you have these commissions that have very nice names, like the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and then you find out it's made up of people from the nuclear industry,
right?
Not people who are at all interested in regulating anything.
Okay.
And
that is true of every single government agency that I can think of. The worst example of it is the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. Talk about a self-canceling phrase. These folks are a revolving door for insurance companies, and they will allow the company to get away with whatever they want. Let me give you an example. There's a thing called ERISA preemption. Now, who in the world has ever heard of ERISA preemption? It's the most important Supreme Court decision affecting insurance regulation in the history of the Supreme Court, and nobody knows about it. And it's like a 25-year-old case. Private Life versus D. Doe is the name of the case. And what it means is that if you obtain any insurance, like health or disability insurance, for example, at your workplace, you lose all of your rights and all of your protections under every state insurance regulation in the United States. You don't have any right to fight back if you lose your house, if you lose your life savings, if you are driven into bankruptcy. You lose your right to a jury trial. You lose your right to take depositions, do discovery, and find out what's going on the other side of the table. You have no rights to do any of those things because all of your rights have been subsumed by federal law. That's what is meant by the term ERISA preemption. ERISA, interestingly enough, is the Employment Retirement Income Security Act that was passed by a former Congress and was a good law intended to protect people's retirement benefits from mergers and acquisitions. But the U.S. Supreme Court grabbed that law and used it to destroy people's rights with respect to insurance companies. Nobody even knows about it. I was interviewed by Ed Bradley once on 60 Minutes, and when we talked about this, he said, wait a minute. I get my disability insurance, Ed Bradley, get my disability insurance from CBS. Are you telling me that I have lost all of my rights under state laws and I have no rights under federal law? I said, that's exactly what I'm telling you. And he just couldn't even believe it. He was the one that suggested that I write the book, which I wrote, The Insult to Injury, which is now going to be morphed into Preemption, which is coming out in May, this coming May of 2014. But, I mean, that's just one example, because you talk about regulatory agencies. I mean, the Federal Trade Commission, the Federal Communications Commission, the nuclear regulatory agencies. I mean, all of them, they are all full of it. You try. I served on Barbara Boxer's committee to review judicial appointments to the federal court system. I was with a half a dozen or so other lawyers that were appointed by her to screen candidates. We had some good people that were interested in becoming federal judges. They didn't have a snowball's chance in hell. The commission itself discouraged their candidacies because they said they're not going to be able to make it through the Senate process. They'll never be selected as judges. We used to have great judges in this country. William O. Douglas, Thurgood Marshall, Earl Warren, people who were courageous, who gave us decisions like Brown versus Board of Education. There would be no integrated schools in the United States today if it wasn't for Brown versus Board of Education. And the guy who argued that case before the Supreme Court, Thurgood Marshall, wound up being appointed as a Supreme Court justice. Today, what do we have? We've got John Roberts. We have Anton Scalia. We've got people like Clarence Thomas. He doesn't qualify, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, regardless of your politics, the man is not qualified to be, you know, a small claims court judge. And here he sits on the United States Supreme Court without ever even asking a question. So we don't have the protections that we used to have of having a buffer in the form of a court that can act as something of an agency to stand up to the legislature and the Senate and all of the politicians with all their money. Those days are gone. It'll take a long, long time before we ever see a good Supreme Court again.
Oh, you got that right.
Do you honestly have any? I mean, I guess you do, but do you have any faith that this will ever happen, or do you think we're on the road to on the end here? I think we're looking at the end of the road for our republic.
Well, it's a fascist system.
It's become a fascist state.
Well, I mean, I get nervous, very nervous, when we start throwing around powerful words that pack such a punch, fascist or this or that or the other thing. I mean, it doesn't make any difference what you call it, a banana state, a banana republic, if you want to. The bottom line is we're a corporate state.
Yes.
We are bought and paid for by big corporations who can get whatever they want out of our legislature and buy whatever they want out of the voters. They can get people to vote against their own interests by simply investing enough money in political campaigns. So, I mean, I don't think we have to have a fascist state, it's bad enough to have a corporate state.
Well, Mussolini said that a corporatist state is a fascist state, okay? Corporatist state is a state that's run by corporations. And yet,
if that's what it is, that's what it is.
He was the head of the fascist country. So, I mean, that's basically what that means.
That's why I wrote Revolt. Hopefully that book or one like it will come along and wake people up. And, you know, to answer a question that you asked earlier, you know, is it likely that this could happen? How is this going to change anything? One possibility, I think, is if people start to act in such a drastic way as to actually say, we do not want to be part of this anymore. We really don't. It's not a land of the free and a home of the brave anymore. I'm sorry, you can sing all the national anthems that you want to, but it doesn't exist. I mean, that part of America that everybody loves and that everybody believes in doesn't exist very much anymore, if at all. And so if enough people stand up and say, you know what, I'm going to vote in favor of this thing, I want to start all over again, that certainly is going to embarrass the hell out of the very politicians that need to be embarrassed. Because if we don't do something along that line, it's not going to change. I mean, it's like it's rolling down the track. It's like a train, and you're not going to stop it unless you do something. And people aren't doing anything right now. Maybe Revolt will give them something to do.
Let me say this. I don't know any politician who even allows himself to be embarrassed. These guys are such bold-faced liars, cheats. Pervert, you name it, okay? And they've got scandal after scandal, all right? And the more scandals they have, okay, the better off they are in the presidential elections, all right? You know, my God, look at McCain. McCain became the head of his party, all right? And the guy was a boob, all right? And now you got Obama. Obama became the head of his party, and he's totally incompetent. All right, I don't know a tremendous number of scandals. He hasn't even allowed anybody. I mean, he's got a birth certificate that nobody. That's a fraud. He hasn't. He won't release any of his Harvard writings. All right, all of his past has been fabricated. As far as we know, his name is actually Barry Satoru. Okay, and he went under a social security number, all right? And he went under a number of them.
Bush before him, who was AWOL for
well,
a while.
I mean, what?
Bush was AWOL.
My opinion about some of those issues, for what it's worth, is that I think it's kind of important to steer clear of concepts and arguments that are divisive factually, where there are reasonable people that say this is nuts, this is crazy. And because we have enough issues to satisfy everyone, Republicans and Democrats alike, that everyone agrees with. I mean, I'd like to know how many people do not agree that our Congress is dysfunctional. It's dysfunctional. Regardless of whether somebody was born in this country or born on the moon, our Congress is dysfunctional. That's the bottom line. Everybody can agree to that. Everyone can also agree that our system of government is out of whack, that money driving everything is totally not okay, that we have to have restrictions, we have to have campaign contribution restrictions, we have to prevent corporations from buying everything left and right in terms of the votes of members of Congress. So people can agree on that. Now, so far, the United States Supreme Court, because they have lifetime appointments and they can flip the international sign of goodwill to anybody who doesn't like what they're doing, and because the Supreme Court was appointed by politicians who are in bed with big money, they have made decisions like the decision striking down the McCain-Feingold campaign restriction legislation. It's just thumbing their nose at both of those United States senators and of all the people who believe we should have campaign finance reform and campaign finance restrictions. So, you know, as long as as the Supreme Court gets away with that sort of thing, the only thing that can change it, obviously, if, since they've said it's unconstitutional to restrict campaign finance, is to have a constitutional amendment that permits it. Well, the chance of having a constitutional amendment enacted that is going to overturn the Supreme Court decision relating to campaign finance reform is close to zero, right? So what are you going to do? How are you going to approach it? All I'm trying to say is that I think we should be very careful on what issues we really focus on so that we're not getting into issues that have got, you know, 51-49 support and opposition or on which reasonable people can disagree. Or even unreasonable people can disagree, but in large numbers. Because if we do that, then we are dividing, and the other side is going to conquer. Because they would love nothing better than to have an easy shot at the opposition. And an easy shot is what they've done for all these years to trial lawyers. The insurance companies have spent a fortune demonizing trial lawyers. And for one reason and one reason only, because they don't want trial lawyers going out there and filing lawsuits to prevent cars from killing people, to prevent asbestos from killing people, to prevent other dangerous products from killing people left and right, tobacco and so on and so forth, that it's killed more people than all of our wars together. I mean, they don't want that to happen. So the insurance companies come out and they demonize lawyers. That's the same thing that politicians do to the opposition. They just divide and conquer. So I think the most important thing people can do in terms of, you know, the concept behind revolt is to be very careful to have an agenda that is widely popular, where people are going to have widespread agreement with the issues that are being presented. And if we have that, then we have something that a lot of people can agree on both sides. If we don't have that, then we're going to have people arguing about Obama's birth certificate for the next 100 years. You know, people are just not, we're not going to get anywhere. We're just going to be fighting about it.
Let me just say this. All right. There are three people in the 20th century that I know were great, great leaders, and I can tell you exactly what happened to each one of them. They each got assassinated. Okay? You had John Kennedy, you had Robert Kennedy, and you had Martin Luther King. These were guys that had rallied a whole lot of people, that had the right ideas, were trying to do the right thing, all right, and were mobilized. And guess what? Pow! Okay, they got hit. And you know what? That stopped everything. Okay, after 68 and after the assassination of Martin Luther King and after the assassination of Robert Kennedy, I mean, the liberal movement just went into the soup, man. We just became, you know, they just, everybody, everything dried up. And everybody, you lost your major leaders, and everybody else became an informant, all right? Everybody else became scared to death of getting shot, right? And then everything went to hell. And then you started this major conservative movement, all right, and through the mid-70s, early 80s, and then you got Reaganism, and you got Bushism, and you got all this horrible, horrible conservative Supreme Court, and I mean, just horrible stuff that went on during the
80s. Let me tell you how right I think you are in what you just said. I used to work for Bobby Kennedy. I was on his campaign charter, and I flew all over the country with him. And I have a book that has not been published yet that I'm working on in final draft form. It's now called This Ain't Harvard, but in its initial title was The Year America Died. And it was about 1968. It was about Martin Luther King Jr., Robert Kennedy, the Democratic Convention, the riots in the streets all over the United States, the riots in Chicago, the election of Richard Nixon, the change in the political structure of the entire country, the change in the Supreme Court, the change in everything, and we never went back. And I completely agree with what you said about that. I was interviewed once by a woman who was writing a draft of an article for a pretty famous guy who was doing a story on Robert Kennedy. And so she interviewed me five or six times for this book. And the last occasion when I met with her, she said, let me ask you a question that I've asked everyone else that I've talked to here. What do you think really happened? What do you think was behind that? And I wouldn't answer the question because I didn't want that to be broadcast around and so on and so forth. So she she kept at it until finally I said, okay. And I'll tell you, as long as you promise that you're not going to attribute it to me. And so she did so. And I told her what I thought one chance, you know, out of many was. And she said, let me tell you something. I've talked to 7 people about this who were close to that entire campaign. Every single one of them said exactly the same thing. And then I told her a story, and it was in my last year of law school at UC Berkeley, in Berkeley, and I took a seminar from Earl Warren, who at the time was, I think was retired from the Supreme Court, former governor of California, former attorney general, as you know. And Warren stepped into that seminar on the first day, and he said, the one thing that I'm not going to talk about is the Warren Commission report. We can talk about anything else you want to talk about. So we sat through the entire seminar for 8 or 10 weeks or however long it was. And the last day of class, I stuck around at the end and waited to just talk to him. And everybody else left. And I finally said to him, I understand that that you're not taking any questions about the Warren Commission report, but I don't have a question. I just want to tell you something. And he looked at me with a quizzical look on his face. He said, what do you want to tell me? And I said, well, I've been thinking about this. And the reason you and Gerald Ford were selected to serve on this commission was because you're both highly credible and trusted people. And I don't think you would ever be part of a cover-up, in terms of the cause of the assassination. But at the same time, it's pretty obvious that there are a lot of holes in the official doctrine about what happened with Lee Harvey Oswald, and too many holes for you to miss them. So what I think is going on is this. If the Soviets were behind it, you'd blow the whistle. If Cubans were behind it, you'd say so. If some other foreign source was behind it, likewise. If it was the mafia or something like that, likewise. You wouldn't hesitate to point the finger. The only thing that you would not point the finger at is if whatever the truth was could tear the country apart. And the only thing that really could tear the country apart would be if somehow or other our government was involved, or one of the branches of our government was involved in it.
Well, you know.
And
you know,
he turned beet red, and he looked at me, and he said, very interesting. Well, it was nice to meet you. And that was the end of the conversation.
Right.
So I think there are a lot of, conspiracy theorists all over the place, and half of them are nuts, and the other half of them are on the way to being nuts. I mean, you can't sustain a movement that is aimed at changing society on the basis of wacko theories and crazy people. So, because it's not going to work. It's not going to work. What's going to work is when people get together and they say, look, there are some things that are happening here that are simply unacceptable. These are not the things that our country was founded on. These are not the basis for our Bill of Rights and our constitutional protections. This is not what we're supposed to be about as a people. The idea that the founding fathers have created a system of government that has evolved into a multi-million dollar payoff system where the wealthiest elements in society can just buy off the legislature, and we call it campaign contributions. Dick Tuck, who worked for Bobby, also said to me one time, graft and corruption used to be illegal, so we legalized it. And that's the problem that everyone faces. That's the problem that needs to be addressed. That's the problem that needs to be corrected. And I agree with you, going back to what I first said, I agree with you about 1968 entirely. That whole subject needs to be addressed very thoroughly, because most people who are alive today were not alive in 1968 and don't remember any of that stuff, which is why I'm writing This Ain't Harvard, and it's why it's important for you to speak out as you are about what happened in 1968.
In my own book, I wrote a book, Naked at the Mic, The Survival of a Liberal in a Time of Peril. Okay, and it was about, I discussed this in chapter 5 of the book. It's called The Assassination of Liberalism. And I mentioned these assassinations, a number of assassinations, including Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy, and John Kennedy. All right, And but the crux of this was that like for instance later it was actually after it wasn't until about 5 or 6 years ago that I discovered that in 1999 the Martin Luther King's family won the wrongful death lawsuit against the United States government, proving that they killed Martin Luther King. He was killed by the United States government, all right, not by James Earl Ray, all right. And James Earl Ray was just it was a patsy that was put up to taking the plea or taking the call.
Well, we've learned since that time an awful lot about the people who were running big government agencies like J. Edgar Hoover,
more than
I think most people want to think about. You know, there are a lot of unanswered questions revolving around that, that's for sure.
And George H.W. Bush, okay, was a culprit there too. So many bad people in our government, you know, that you just keep, you know, that had so much power during those periods of time.
And continue to have
power.
And
you know, it becomes a dynasty, right? Like the Bush dynasty, you know? It's like, well, the Clinton dynasty. I mean, all of
the
dynasties that seem to be, wielding all the power and corrupting the entire system and keeping it as a status quo, I don't know, Ray. I appreciate your frankness, and I appreciate what you're saying, but by God, from what we've seen and what we've done and what we've the news that we've covered over the last 15 years or so, 13, 14 years we've been on radio, this has been, I don't see it. I don't see it at all. We thought there was hope, but, man, I'll tell you, you know, there is none. There is so – they got this thing so sewed up, all right, that experts like yourself don't want to see conspiracy anywhere, even though you know it's there. You know, you don't want to say what it is. You don't want to say it's New World Order and the Bilderbergers and, you know, everything that everybody is talking about.
The problem that I see is that they're so far ahead of us all we all do is react to something that's happened. And the world is so fast-paced.
Yep.
And so many things happen that when something happens a year ago, it's out of the minds of everybody, and they're on to the next thing.
A year ago,
Months ago.
1 month ago, you know.
You know, it's very difficult to keep people focused on the issue and the problem. Very, very difficult.
And the media.
But as you say, and the media contributes to this, but as you say, as you said a while ago, is that until it affects you personally, you really don't have the impetus to support change.
But see, and it has affected Lila and myself personally, and it's affected you personally, all right, and a lot of people personally. But we're at a point where we're trying. I mean, you're making a lot of progress in what you're doing. We've made some progress, a lot of progress. In a lot of ways, but it's so mind-boggling that how much oppression there is out there, and for every step forward we take, it seems like we're taking three backwards. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether you have that same kind of feeling.
Yes. The answer is yes.
Okay. Yeah, but before we're right to the end of our show, but before we end, I would like you to tell our audience where they can get your books, because I think it's very important that they know that and that people would be very interested.
I'm going to tell you, what about the book?
Where can people purchase your book and how can they get them?
Oh, yeah, that's that's what I'm supposed to be doing, is promoting the book, and I haven't said anything about it. Thank you for reminding me. Right now, I think it's going to be on Amazon in about, I think, 2 to 3 weeks. I don't think you can get it on Amazon now. You might be able to, but in 2 to 3 weeks you will, because it's going through a final edit. and that process is going to take that amount of time. At that juncture, I don't know, circle your calendar around, pardon me, around the third week in February or something like that, and call me if for some reason you have trouble with it at that point. But if you go to Amazon.com and you just type in Revolt, the Secession of Mill Valley, or you type in the word Revolt and my name, Ray Voorhees, B like boy, O-U-R-H like Harry, I-S, Ray Voorhees. The book will pop right up. It'll pop up even now. I'm very happy to say that even though you may not be able to purchase it online for the next 3 weeks, I've still gotten reviews that were submitted by people who were sent advanced copies of it. I don't know who these people are. I don't know any of them. But I think every one of the reviews is 4 to 5 star rated. But Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives, all sides of the political spectrum. So people seem to like it, and I'm very glad with that. It gives me a little bit of hope.
I got a PDF of it myself there that Julia sent, and it was an unedited one. But I wish you success.
You too. Thank you very much.
Do you have a website that they can go to for it, or?
I really apologize for this bad connection. There's not a lot that I can do about it, but could you repeat that again?
Do you have a website?
I have a law firm website. It's R.F. Boris at, or you know, the best place to look is Ray Boris Associates. That's the name of my law firm. So it's just RayBoris Associates.com. And there's an author's website as well. Although I must say that I'm not quite sure I know what the website address is, so you'll have to go to my law firm website instead. If you try Ray Boris author's website, you'll probably Google that. You'll probably be able to find it. Hang on 1 second. Someone is telling me where I might have it. Ray Boris. Author, AUTHOR singular, .com. So RayBoris Authors .com.
Where is your publisher?
I'm really sorry. Say it again.
I said, who is your publisher?
Well, the publicist is Peg Booth, and she's in Southern California.
She's publishing. Oh, that's great.
Who's the publicist or who's the publisher?
Who's the publisher?
It's Amazon. It's published on Amazon.
It's
Brittany Press.
Great. Creative space.
Well, I think we're all very lucky that you've written this book and the other books that you've written, and perhaps this one will be made into a movie.
Well, I've had some discussions about that already. With a woman who has won an Academy Award for Norma Rae. She's person who produced that movie. And
I could see that happening with this, and I think it probably will. I wish you the very best of luck, and thank you very much for talking with us this evening.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure. I'm sorry for the bad connection.
Oh, that's okay, and maybe we'll get a chance to talk to you again.
Okay, I hope so. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Ray. Good night. And that was Ray Boris, his book is called Revolt, the Secession of Mill Valley. And nice guy. So
Very nice.
We want to thank everybody who joined us tonight, and please join us tomorrow night when we cover a lot of union issues and all kinds of stuff.
And good night, folks.
Good night, everybody.
And thanks for being with us.